Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Faith Church Podcast. I'm your host, Jay Williams, and joining me today is Jeff Clossy.
Hey, good morning, Jay. How's it going, man?
It's going great.
Awesome.
Guess
what?
Guess what tonight is?
Oh, tonight is a big night.
Tonight is a very big night.
It'll be so fun.
It is the Peshtigo Marinette soccer match. And this is where Jeff and I become foes. We become adversaries because we each have a son on opposing sides tonight.
I will be controlling the scoreboard, so I think I have more power than you.
I don't know. I'm a sports psychologist. I'm the team psychologist. So I'll be on the bench.
If I forget
boosting
to put
morale.
I did forget to put a goal up for an opposing team, my first time doing that. But thankfully someone in my family saw that and immediately texted me and scolded me. And I said, all
how
right,
do you forget
I'll put it up
a goal? It's not basketball, man.
It's because I'm so just in the moment, you know, engrossed in it. And it's like, oh, that's right.
You're too busy screaming at your...
I'm the one. Yeah, that's me.
That's you, yeah.
Just lose it. No, I'm like nuts. Watching. Cause
it was out of protest.
So if you've been...
You felt it was offsides.
All right, I want to give this.
Okay.
Jay, I love how you're trying to fill this story out. Instead of that, if you have not been to a high school soccer game, Jay and I would recommend that if you have time ever to go to one. It is so exciting. It is like nonstop action. And I think for me... that's why I totally missed putting it up, because they like score, and then within like 10 seconds, play is back at it. We're like going, and it doesn't like reset for 30 seconds, and people don't change, like walk down to different sides of the field, and it's just so action packed. And I think most people that haven't watched a game before are surprised how physically intense it is, how much endurance is required, and it's just beautiful. So it's going to be a really fun night.
I just love that in football, American football country, you're telling them how exciting soccer is. And the narrative, this gives it a great example of cultural differences, because the perception of soccer is that it's really boring. But what you just said is true. It is constant action. When someone has never seen American football before and soccer is their main sport and they've never seen American football, their first reaction almost always is, this is so boring, because it stops all the time. That there is, in American football, there is way more time, like so much more time of not doing anything than actual plays. So I think, I just don't, like, people don't realize that. And it's just so funny, because here the thought is like, I remember growing up with like, oh, soccer is so boring, but it's like any sport. And like, if the only thing you find entertaining about a sport is the scoring, then it's boring. Oh, that's good. That rhymes. That could be your mnemonic device. If all you care about is scoring, then it is all boring, but it's not boring. If you're watching all the action. So I say this about baseball. People talk about baseball and how boring baseball is. Well, baseball is not boring if you are ingrained, like if you're interacting with the pitcher batter drama between them and the framing of the pitch and all these different things. And baseball is like, I can watch a baseball game and just be completely sucked into it. But I get that's not for everybody. Right. But if you're only watching baseball for the runs, then it's super boring. And soccer is the same way. If you're only going to watch it for the goals, then.
Yeah. They're not usually very high scoring. But
no.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, you mentioned being a football culture. That's the reason I even mention it, because it's amazing to me. So Liam has some buddies this year that actually joined the team as seniors, which is a courageous thing to do, to start a sport, you know, you've never played. And what you always hear from the families of those kids is, wow, I wish I would have known this was so action-packed before. And, you know, it's just, obviously I realize it's a more of a minority sport here for sure.
For sure.
But it is so fun. So it's going to be a really fun night tonight. And I'm excited about it. And hope the refs are up to the task. You know, it's always exciting when you have two rival kind of right next to each other schools going
at
it. And this year it's in Marinette. It alternates every year. Right. So we're in Marinette this year. And
I believe Silas went 2-1 in his career against Marinette. There was one year they didn't play, the COVID year. They didn't play. But but Liam is 2-1 against Peshtigo, like the overlapping.
Mm-hmm.
And Judah is 0-1 right now.
Yeah. It'll
tonight,
it'll be really fun.
I just So if you're listening to this, it's already happened.
Yep. You didn't miss it. Well, wait, you did.
You did miss it, but you should just pray retroactively for Jeff and I to still be friends after, because tonight we are foes. There's no love lost tonight.
You're so funny, man. I just love that you're just going so deep into that.
People don't even know right now. I'm like wearing my Peshtigo gear.
He is, actually.
And I'm like...
And I have...
No.
I'm not.
You don't...
I have a shirt with a bike on it. Surprise.
I was a Marinette fan last night.
Yeah, you were. That was great.
Go Marinette. See, I'm, you know...
That was...
But tonight...
Anyway. It's fun, too, because up here... So there's no M&M soccer game because... Menominee doesn't have soccer.
No.
So Peshtigo, Marinette are like the only two schools
in this area that have it. Yeah, that's the big. There will literally be dozens of people there.
Yes, there will.
Watching it and going. And what was I going to say? Oh, never mind.
I'll make sure the refs keep you under control.
Yeah. I will not.
Hey, watch that guy right over there.
I will gladly remember you and your suffering tonight.
Oh, good transition. I see what you did there.
I hope to be able to remember you and your suffering.
Now we're right in Hebrews.
Yeah, we are right in Hebrews, which is what this was really about, is about high school soccer.
They wouldn't expect anything less.
No, I didn't draw that specific line. I thought that was obvious.
Yes.
All right. So what do we, how do we do? You're supposed to be steering the ship. I did this podcast with Christoph and I expect to have to steer the ship, but with you, you're supposed to be the adult in the room.
I'm just waiting for my chance here.
You got it.
Just give me a chance.
Lots of chances.
All right. Hebrews 13. And we are in this beautiful section where basically it's like imperative after imperative here, like at the end of this long discourse that we've been unpacking for months. I don't even know how long we've been in it, Jay, now, how many months it's been, but like all year, right?
I mean,
it's been a lot. It's been so beautiful to unpack it. I'm so thankful for it. But we're taking like 4 weeks on different content here at the beginning of chapter 13. And this one is verse 3. Remember those who are in prison as though in prison with them, and those who are mistreated, since you also are in the body. And I loved where you went with this. And you unpacked how what it's getting at there with prison was they were in prison for their faith. So like for their immediate context, the way they received this, the application was, don't forget about those who are suffering for Jesus right now. Think about what it would be like to be there as though you were being mistreated as well, because you are united as one body. But then you took it and then contextualized it for where we are now. And I think that's where the rubber really is meeting the road for us, right? And I guess, so you had a number of different examples of ways that, you know, I think ways and maybe tendencies that we have to kind of make a mess of this, like ways that we get off track pretty easily. And I think all of us who follow Jesus would say, yeah, we need to remember those who are suffering in our life, and putting an emphasis on especially those who we are prone to forget, especially those who we are prone to maybe overlook in our life. But even in that desire to do that, often we really struggle with it, both on the giving end, but then I think sometimes on the receiving end as well. And I appreciate that's the direction you went with this.
Yeah, it was hard to figure out. I restructured this message so many times because it was hard to know how do I address it, because I thought it was really important that, and actually you mentioned that was one of the outlines actually at one point, was I was going to just talk about like, how do you give, like how do you share, bear one another's burdens, and how do you receive that? So I didn't even get to talk about all the ways that I think we have pitfalls in that. One of the ones that I left out was the idea that we don't always share what's going on. So if we want to have a culture of people bearing one another's burdens, you have to actually share. And some people, I did talk about the ditch, and you mentioned this, you know, several weeks ago about like your identity being in your own suffering. And so that's one way, that's one ditch to fall into. But the other ditch then with that is to not share, to just say, well, I'm just not going to tell anybody. I can handle this myself. So there are a lot of pitfalls in that, and the reason why that's important, like how we receive people's care and how we give the care, both of those feed off of each other. That's why it's so important to look at it, because if we have a culture where we don't receive care well and graciously and in the right spirit, then it doesn't encourage people to care for us. Like, it actually puts us all on guard and makes us all kind of then start, like I did mention, it makes us all become very inward focused. Mm-hmm. And when you have a culture where everybody is very inward focused, either protective of themselves or being like fixated on how people are caring for me, then nobody actually ends up being cared for. So I did want to take that. I didn't want it to be, I would always rather just talk about like, hey, whose burdens can you bear? But I just felt like I can't do that without talking about, hey, we need to be really honest about how we're cultivating this culture and how are we receiving that kind of care?
Yeah. And one of the examples you gave, like how when we are suffering, we can really be, it can obscure our vision of other people's suffering, like, or like blind us, I think, to other people's needs. You gave the example of like, say you're at the ER, you're at the ER for like a broken arm, you know, and someone comes in and they're like bleeding horribly and it needs to be addressed immediately, and they get to skip the line, you know, and you've been there longer. And in that situation, we would all realize, yeah, that's how that has to go. And I think we struggle with that though in our interpersonal relationships about this when we are suffering, because we sometimes can think, I don't think we would say it actually, but we can feel like we are the ones who are suffering and our suffering is worse than other people. It's a lie that we can believe, essentially. Like, I have it worse than anyone else and no one else shares this suffering that I'm sharing right now. And then I think what gets added to that when we misuse our imagination is that, and no one sees me in the middle of this, because that's the worst. Then you just feel like no one recognizes this.
Yeah.
In that moment. I don't know if this is when you introduced the bronze rule. You were talking about that, but you mentioned like the bronze rule.
And yeah, had you heard of that before?
No, I've heard the silver rule, not the bronze rule.
Yeah, the silver, why don't you tell me? Because I also discovered that for the first time with silver.
Yeah, the golden rule first, right, is do unto others as you would have them do to you. Then the silver rule, which I heard from an author that I love, taught in a lecture once, it's do not do to others what you would not want them to do to you. So that's, it's kind, right, of a negative, yep, way of saying the golden rule. And then say what the bronze rule is.
The bronze rule is do unto others as they have done to you.
Yeah.
And I even twist, like put a little more, do unto others as you have perceived that they have done to you.
Yes.
So if you, we live in a culture now where it's almost like, well, perceived offense is the same thing. So if you say something to me, or you, if I feel like you ignored me, or I feel like you were dismissive of whatever I was going through, well, then that's reality. And then I repay, even if that isn't what was going through your mind, you know, because you didn't know, or you know, whatever the case is. Yeah. And you were bringing up the silver rule, but are you bringing up
it's just so interesting to me, like, and all of those, you know, rightly applied in context could be useful, right? So if you're going to do to other people what they do to you, and they love you well, and right, you see that, then that's great.
Yeah, that's true. Right? It's like the modeling thing.
It is.
Like,
yeah, it could. But we're broken, right? So then it obviously ends up being, you poked me in the eye, I'm going to poke you in the eye, and whatever, you know?
Right. But it's so interesting that I genuinely hadn't thought of a positive side of the bronze rule, and I bet most people haven't, which should tell us something about our perception, yes, of things. Because if we were sitting there thinking like, do unto others as they've done to you, and if my perception is that, oh man, people are so loving to me and gracious to me, yeah, I should totally do what, yep, I have seen, you, yep, know, as people. Because essentially, we live by the bronze rule in accordance to what God has done for us, right? So we are called to do unto others as God has done to us. And so that, it is interesting how everything, literally everything, has this redeemed version, and it can be twisted and perverted, you know, which is just, that's a whole thing in and of itself. But I think, like, I really wanted to address the idea of, you know, who are we being called in this passage to remember? How does that apply to us? And how are we to remember them? And then how do we receive that care? And I think one of the things I wish I'd gotten to flesh out a little bit more was the idea, and I mentioned it, but I would have liked to have spent more time on it, is this idea that there's a huge difference between receiving care from other people and receiving care from our Father in heaven through people. And if I could give anybody just like a very clear thing to just check ourselves in, and if you want to experience more joy in receiving, because nobody wants to feel forgotten. Nobody wants to feel unloved. But if I'm thinking about, I use the example, I was being facetious about my birthday, you know, and everything, but also, you know, I use the real example of being in the hospital. If I'm going to keep a list of who contacted me and who didn't, I'm going to have a big list of people who didn't. And that's not going to produce any joy in me. I'm going to start to feel like the enemy is going to use that. I'm going to feel forgotten versus if I'm thinking about how God is caring for me through people, then it feels like an abundance of, you know, care and messages. And there's just such a difference. I used the example on Sunday that got like a groan and a clear, like visceral response when I said, you know, just, I gave a hypothetical situation of somebody coming up to you after the service and saying like, hey, I've been thinking about you. Like, how did your surgery go or whatever? I don't remember exactly what I said. And what if your response is, well, I'm glad you noticed, nobody else has asked me. But that's a real thing that happens. And, but think about in that moment, if you're fixated on people and getting your comfort from people, then you're discouraged by the fact that they came up to you. But if you're getting care from your Father in heaven and you see it as like, oh God, you sent this messenger to ask me to be a physical presence. And I mentioned how God doesn't owe us that. God could just say, look, in your spirit, I give you comfort, but he's extravagantly generous. And so then he, on top of the sufficient comfort he gives us in our spirit, he also then sends people to comfort us and to remember us. And so we're his messengers. And it's just an odd situation when we're basically then saying, well, why didn't everybody, God, why didn't you send everyone on the planet to, you know, comfort me and be like, because you didn't, like, it's the comfort comes from the Father. So again, sorry, I'll summarize that. And then I'd love to get your feedback on that because, but just really be considering when you receive comfort, like you're receiving comfort from the Father in a myriad of ways, but one of them is through people. So receive it through people rather than from people.
Yeah, I think that is a super important shift of perspective. And it, man, think about how different life is when you take that perspective. Basically, your primary viewpoint is vertical to God. And, you know, and we've talked about this a lot, like, wondering, God, what is your heart towards me as I suffer? What are you feeling towards me in the middle of this? And we know from his word that he's a comforter. Like, my favorite is 2 Corinthians 1. That's like, just blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who comforts us in all our affliction. But like you're pointing out, that comfort comes from often through another person. And God is the one who orchestrates that and designs it and for our good. To love us and to shower his mercy on us. And yeah, how none of us, I think, with that perspective, like when we were thinking that way, would say, but God, I wanted this other person to do that. And I wanted 10 more people to do that. You know what I mean? Like, it's really, you can imagine how you can get there, but I don't think people are going to want to be there, right? If we're wanting to follow Jesus and be faithful to him, that is not where we want our mind to go. And I think that's one of the reasons in the New Testament. I mean, you start counting the number of times that we're encouraged and commanded to be thankful. I think that's part of it too, because our thankfulness is also directed towards God, because we believe that all the good we receive is from him. Every single blessing we have in our life is from him. And it's that God-directed sight or perspective that I believe is part of what we receive in the gospel, is that's our reality now. We're united with him. And when Jesus said to remain attached to him, I think that's part of it as well, right? It's like, he's the one providing for us. He's the vine. We're the branch. He's the vine, and he can use other branches to encourage us, but ultimately it's through the nourishment he provides.
Yeah, and the reality is that we also fail to do that and
we
to do that well.
Yep.
And so there are times, I'm not going to out anybody, but somebody came up to me after the service. It was so great. but like I was mentioning my birthday and being goofy about that or whatever, and somebody came up to me and said, I forgot my spouse's birthday this year. And I said, I made some kind of little joke about like, well, you just tell your spouse God didn't forget it. So that should be enough. And then I said, but also you should remember your spouse's birthday. And they laughed and it was fine. But that's a good example though. And we see this sometimes in marriages where we say all of our needs for intimacy are fulfilled in Christ. And if my need for intimacy is fulfilled in Christ, then I'm free to love my wife and not put the burden of that intimacy on her. Like I should not be going to my wife for what Christ should supply. But also the way it is designed is that I would receive part of that because of God's extravagant generosity, that my wife would also love me well in that. Like I get to receive that also in her physical presence. And I think that's one way to think about it of when people say, well, shouldn't my friend treat me this way? Well, yes, but we need to have the perspective that that's God's extravagant generosity on top of his already very present care and provision. So if that makes sense, is like if you're in a place where you've already feel like you've experienced, I mean, so imagine being in worship on Sunday and you've been struggling. And we actually had a response from somebody who illustrated this of receiving just comfort from God and then feeling free to go and rejoice with someone else and then also be mindful to those who are suffering, even as they were suffering, because their posture was now it's from this perspective that God, you have comforted me in so many ways. Like you bear my burdens. I feel so free in you. Like I've taken your yoke upon me. It is easy. It is, your burden is light. And you're already from that posture. Now, if anybody comes up to you and says, hey, I've just been thinking about you. I've been praying for you this week. It feels like just an abundance. It feels like, oh my goodness. Like not only God, did you minister to me in this moment, like in my spirit, my heart, but now you just sent this person over here to tell me that they were praying for me. And you and I'm sure maybe I should just speak for myself. I have had moments, I've had days where that's my response. That's how I'm feeling. And I can tell you that is way better than I've had. Also had days of like, I don't think anybody notices me. And the reality is that if you are satisfied in Christ and the comfort and you are connected to the vine in that way, then every person, any person that says anything to you about it just feels like grace upon grace. But if you don't, and if you look to people for that comfort, then it doesn't matter how many people come up to you, it'll never be enough. Like you and I both in ministry have had myriads of examples of people saying the phrase, nobody noticed, nobody talked to me, nobody called me. And there are dozens of people. I use the sad but funny illustration of the guy saying that the church, that other church, again, not this church and not any church I was a part of, a totally different church, saying that the church had never given him anything. And someone in the church had actually donated a kidney. That just shows our, like how twisted our perspective becomes, that out of a spirit of thanksgiving and feeling really cared for from God, that everything feels like generosity and grace upon grace. But in the absence of that, nothing will ever be enough.
Yeah. I mean, it's exactly right. It's like the more you get of it, even if you're receiving that, like what we want to receive, like being seen in our suffering, if it's basically like what you need is human validation and you can't see God doing like comforting you through the human, there will never be enough human praise or comfort. There just never will in any area of our life. That's just the way we work as human beings, unfortunately. and cause we like to compare, and you mentioned it, comparison steals joy. Whenever we do that, like, well, this person, when they went through this, they got this, right? That's what our heart can do. And I think like to add to what you were saying too about like just being connected to Jesus in the middle of receiving it, off like when we do feel like, and like you said, sometimes people really do fail us. Like they do. When we receive that and we realize like I should have been comforted by this person in my life, but they didn't, we can respond to that when we're abiding in Jesus in a totally different way as well. Like in that moment, Jesus has made provision for this in his word and with his spirit in us for the moment of being like just not seen, or the moment of being wronged. His teachings go into this in such great depth of how to respond to that. But I think when we're suffering, it's very difficult for us to respond to any sort of thing that we feel like is a slight towards us in a way that Jesus calls us to, in a way that would actually bring life. But really in those moments of us feeling like, man, I just don't feel seen, his intention, I believe his heart towards us, is that we would learn on a more like deep, intimate, tangible way basis that we are his and that he does see us, that we would grow in our knowledge of him. And as we know him more, that's when we actually get to know ourselves better. And that's how we can tell we're so seen by God. He has made such provision for our lives in every way. I don't know if you've ever heard the quote, Jay. I can't remember who said it. I think maybe Henry Nouwen, like kind of a 20th century writer, Christian writer. He said something like, we need to forgive each other for not being God. And I think that's a really interesting insight into human relations, that sometimes because it's in us to need God, it's in us to find our deepest satisfaction in him. Like he's made us that way. If we take what we're meant to find in him and then apply it to a human being and seek it in a human in some way, we will constantly feel like they are wronging us. And the sad thing is they never were meant to bear that. They're not all knowing. They do forget. You know what I mean? We're just limited. And sometimes we're just sinful. I mean, just to add to that, we're sinful. I have found that phrase, it's just a quick one, to be helpful in those moments where I might feel like someone missed me, or vice versa. You know, I missed out. I miss someone, because I do too. I blow it. You know, I don't always see when people really need a word from me. I don't always know. And I like that you started talking about that practical part too. Like we need to help each other in this. We need to both give grace in those moments of feeling missed, but also help us to know. Like I want to know if I'm missing someone.
Well, and that's where trust comes in. Like if we have this deep, like brotherly love, then you assume that others would want to know. For example, when your birthday is coming up, like you assume, you know, some people try to hide their birthday and then they get upset if nobody's
it's like a test.
Right. And, but I think assuming that your brothers and sisters want to care for you, they want to pray for you, they want to minister to you, that's a really good place to start. And I think for a lot of us, we just don't believe that that's the case. So then we look for the evidence that confirms what we're already assuming. So again, if your assumption is, well, nobody cares that I'm here, then it's confirmation bias. Like you're just going to look for the evidence. And so you could literally, I mean, I've watched it happen. I've watched people be stopped and talked to by multiple people. But if they're fixated on, yeah, but the pastor didn't come and talk to me but it really starts at that core. If I'm assuming that I'm not welcomed here, then I'm going to internalize, whatever. I'm going to interpret everything through that lens. And I think, with that, I would also say that where we start, if we want to cultivate a culture where we are able to bear one another's burdens well, that's going to increase as we receive first, that we receive comfort from God. So I was thinking about that passage, I pulled it up, the 2 Corinthians passage that you mentioned, and I'll just read it. This is 2 Corinthians 1, verse 3. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercies and God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our affliction, so that we may be able to comfort those who are in any affliction with the comfort with which we ourselves are comforted by God. Now, it's a very dense, it's almost like, it feels like John wrote it because of how like circular it is and how, cumbersome. I really wish I spoke Greek fluently, because I'm sure in the Greek it's maybe not so clunky, saying comfort so many times. But it is this idea that if we are a community at its best, so like casting the vision of who we are called to be, if we are a community that has been received the comfort of God in our affliction, we have been satisfied and just we have immersed ourselves in God's presence, and so we know he is near and we've been comforted by him, that then that will allow us to comfort one another. And if everybody's doing that, then we are also going to receive comfort by being in a community that has been so comforted by God that we are able to comfort others with that same comfort. And so, like, that's the aim. But the only way to do that is we have to receive our comfort first from God. We have to be satisfied in that. We have to look to him as our true comforter, as the fulfiller of anything that we need. And then the second part of that is then we need to look to comfort others. And part of, like, one of the responses I got was by somebody who has gone through a lot of grief. And they said, I was struggling with what to do with my own burdens. And she said, then you answered it in the sermon that I should bear one another's burdens. Like, that's also, so when we do that, when we take the comfort we've been given by God and we comfort others, we are contributing to a culture that now has a bunch of people who are comforted by God and looking to comfort one another. And when you're in that environment, everybody is being cared for. Everyone's being remembered. Everyone's being prayed for. Everyone's being encouraged. But if we are cultivating an environment where everyone is looking to themselves and looking to other people to be their comfort and fixated on their own suffering, then we aren't looking to God. And therefore, like you said, we're gonna end up with a lot of people who are not able to be God for us, which is only going to drive us deeper into bitterness and resentment and into not desiring to comfort other people, because nobody feels like comforting others or bearing someone else's burden when we don't feel like we've been comforted. So imagine having to move on a Saturday and asking for help and nobody can help you. And then the next weekend, one of those friends also needs to help and everybody goes and helps them. We're going to feel like we're not going to want to go help. Like, that's our own flesh. That the next weekend it would be hard to help. But if God is your fount, and so you are, everything you need is already satisfied, then you're able to, like, you're operating from this tank that is overflowing, and then you're able to go and bear other people's burdens, even if they forgot about you. Like, you can wish somebody a happy birthday that forgot about your birthday.
It makes me think so much of the perspective is so different when we are following Jesus and we know and experience an intimate connection with him. So, like, for example, this morning I was reading in John and Jesus talks about that he is the good shepherd and that we are like sheep in his hand. And then he actually gets in big trouble for it, because then he says, and we are in his Father's hand. And then he says, and the Father and I are one. So then people pick up stones to stone him. But that picture that right now I am living this day, this Wednesday, a few hours away from a soccer game I can't wait for, right? I'm living it, though, in the palm of God's hand. That's my actual situation. And you mentioned this, I don't know if it was this Sunday or the Sunday before, but about we are always at home, too. That's another way of thinking of it. So, like, these images of being in God's hand, meaning cared for all the time. Like, he never forgets who we are. He never forgets our needs. Jesus says he knows them before we ask. Or like Jesus was saying, that he's the good shepherd and we are his sheep. So there's another image that we can add to our knowledge of who God is and what our circumstance is. Because our circumstance, no matter what else is going on, whether we're suffering, whether we're comforting someone, whether we're receiving what we really want or not, our circumstance is always that we are well taken care of sheep. Doesn't mean it's easy. We make that so clear, right? It doesn't mean our lives are easy. It doesn't mean it's smooth sailing, but it does mean he is with us in the middle of it. And to me, that is what changes everything. And I mean, it's one of the most exciting parts about following Jesus is that we get to live that way. The challenge, I think, for all of us, me included, is to, like, have that consciousness of that in the moment when the heat feels like it got turned up on us. You know what I mean? And especially in the moment of suffering that we didn't anticipate. And I, to be honest, all suffering's like that, but there are moments in our life where we experience things that we just could not have anticipated and we're so caught off guard. And that's where I do think when we think about then taking that idea of what is our actual situation, that's one way we can comfort each other. So not in a flippant way, but in a loving, caring way, we can remind each other of what our circumstance is. And that's what I need. I know it in my life. When I have those moments, I need someone who can say to me, but remember who your God is. Remember what he's already done for you and remember that he's with you right now. And acknowledging that it's hard at the same time, mm-hmm. not saying, oh, so therefore it's not hard. That's not it. But I think that's one of the ways that we end up comforting each other. So it's interesting to me that the very thing we need in order to comfort in our suffering is the very thing other people need as well. And I think that's probably what Paul's getting at there in 2 Corinthians 1. It'd be a passage, by the way, if Jay just read it, but I would encourage you, if you haven't read that recently, just read the first paragraph of 2 Corinthians 1. It's just beautiful, talking about the way we suffer, but then in the way God meets us more, even more abundantly with comfort in those moments.
Yeah. One passage that I often go to in my mind, sometimes I share it and sometimes I don't, but it's just as a back, in the background is Jesus, when he interacts with Mary and Martha after Lazarus has died. And I just, that picture has always been so helpful to me in comforting others and bearing with one another's burdens, because Jesus weeps with them and he grieves with them and he receives their accusations and their anger and their heart, and he hears it and he grieves with them. And even though he knows exactly what he's going to do, so he grieves with them, he draws their attention to him, to who he is and what they can trust in, and then he performs this miracle. And I always love that picture, because it's easy to think that God is like the parent who just says, oh, just get over it. It's not that big of a deal. Like, you're going to grow up and it's going to be fine. But he doesn't do that. Like, everything is small in the sense of it's not going to last for eternity. And yet he meets us in our grieving and grieves with us. He weeps with us. And then also reminds us of who he is and how he can be trusted. And so Jesus talks about the resurrection, and the response is, yeah, I believe that in the last days, like, we'll be raised. And Jesus says, no, I am the resurrection and life, like, believe in me. And it's just so powerful to give us perspective to say, we can hold both of these things. We can grieve immensely. We can sit with people in their grief. We can handle their crying out to God, their frustration, their anger, their hurt, their despair. We can handle all of that and hold on to that in light of the fact that we serve Jesus Christ, who is resurrected and will make all things right. And we can sit in that with people. And so sometimes I'll bring it up of like, to allow that. So we give space to both things. Cause I think sometimes what we do is we feel like it has to be an either or. Like, you're either grieving and in despair, or you're trusting in Christ. And I just feel like in that narrative, we see the beautiful picture of both. It's the father, you know, the son who says, I believe, help my unbelief. Like, we see this picture all the time of people who are both grieving and struggling in this, but also clinging to Jesus. And so that is the comfort. And that's the already not yet comfort that we all have when we're the comfort that we're given is that God says, I see you, I'm with you, and I will make all things right. Like, that's ultimately the comfort that we have, which is why Jesus says, I am the resurrection and life. Like, you're not believing, you're not trusting in some theological concept. You're trusting in me. And so I was thinking about that. And then I was also thinking about, okay, well, if we are receiving that comfort, how do we practically do that then? So we're talking a little bit, I feel like we kind of jumped from like, okay, let's make sure we're receiving things well and looking to receive from God so that we can comfort others. And we just gave a little practical thing of how do you How do you comfort others? And I had a whole section actually about that, that I cut out of like acknowledge people in their pain. I mentioned it a little bit. I just kind of glossed over it, but that's a big one, is like, we try to avoid things. We want to make ourselves feel better, so we'll say something that we're trying to fix it. Like, you don't have to fix it. Don't ignore it. You can sit with people. You can just go up to somebody and say, I'm so sorry. You can, you know, you can share like just a reminder of, I'm so glad that God is with us in this moment. That's a way that you can say that. That's not saying like, well, don't worry about it, God's in control. But to just to say, I'm so thankful that God, like if you're praying with somebody who's suffering, that's, I often will say like, God, thank you that we can bring this to you. Like, just give praise to God and help them get into that space of, we can talk to God about this. He is here with us. But how do we, is there anything practical that you can think of that would help someone receive the comfort from God? Like, what should we think about? What should we fix our minds and our hearts and our eyes on when we are suffering, and we say, I don't want to put this on other people. So how do I first and foremost receive my comfort from God so that I'm able to graciously receive it, so it changes my perspective when other people are comforting me?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I would say the first thing is that we need to be intentional about spending time with God. And what I mean by that is in interacting with Him, hearing His voice in His word, meditating on His voice in His word, and then responding to Him in prayer. Because when we go to the scriptures, what we find is people who've experienced what we have and much worse. And we see examples of how they then work through that with God and received His comfort. You know, it's no secret I love the Psalms so much because of that, because you get to see people, how they deal with brokenness. So like Psalm 13 is the prototypical lamenting prayer. And I think that would be a great one to be reading, and then letting God speak that into your heart, into your life. Sometimes a friend of mine wrote a book on even changing the Psalms, like transforming them into like first person, or even inserting your name in it. So like Psalm 23, for example, it already is written that way, the Lord is my shepherd, but making sure that when you read it and think about it, you know that my right there is you. The Lord is Jeff's shepherd. The Lord is Jay's shepherd, and or insert your name. I mean, that's like, it sounds simple, and maybe it is too simple, but I do think that can bring great comfort, because what we desperately need is to hear the voice of the God who loves us. And we know that from the very beginning, like starting Genesis 1, 2, 3, through difficulty, what God does, because He's loving, is He comes near. He finds them. He gives them clothes to wear, right? He clothes them. He takes care of them. And that's just the nature of God. He pursues us. And we can get so blinded from that, though. That's the problem. Like, we don't realize that. It can feel in our experience like that's not happening. So I do think, I guess the first thing I would say is, we just need a regular habit of really communing with Him intentionally, spending time with Him.
Yeah, I was thinking about, this is a little bit the reverse, but it shows perspective when Jesus says, you know, when I was in prison, you visited me. When I was thirsty, you gave me something to drink. And they say, well, when did we do that? And He said, you know, you did it to the least of these, you did it also to me. What he's also drawing to attention here is just our perspective. Like, we miss things, you know, all the time. And so one thing that I've experienced that has been really helpful is when I'm struggling, when I do pray to God to ask Him for comfort, I just ask Him, like, I just need to know You're with me. I need to know that You see me. And that's practicing the presence, but then having my eyes open to see the gifts that He's given. I had a friend one time who was struggling and noticed on their way to meet with somebody all these different, their favorite flower. It was tulips, and they were talking about, they were looking at these tulips, and they just noticed that there was a little out of season, and they just noticed them, but didn't connect anything. Just like, that was weird. Those were really beautiful tulips. I'm not used to seeing them. And then went and met with this pastor. And as the pastor's praying for them, the pastor said, I'm just getting this picture of tulips, and I don't even know what this means, but it just feels like, and started praying about like how it like flourishing like tulips and just all this stuff. And it, the pastor had no idea what they were doing, but this person is just sitting there going like, just overcome with emotion. And it was like God saying, Hey, like tapping the shoulder, that was me. And, but we'd miss it. You know, if that pastor, it was still the same care, but we sometimes miss it. And I find that, you and I have both experienced this on Sunday morning when somebody, I don't want to attribute to coincidence what I believe is just God's kindness and care. It was a couple of weeks ago. I think I mentioned this when I actually was doing this with Christoph. I don't think I mentioned it to you that somebody had said, we were talking about an issue before church and about, expectations from other people and feeling the weight of expectations and just reminding this person, Jesus says, come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden. Like he's the one that puts the yoke upon you. So he's the one that you are actually responsible to. And then you got up and introduced communion and used that passage, that Matthew 11 passage. And I genuinely don't think I've ever heard you or anyone else use that passage for communion. So why of all the times that you would use that passage? And afterwards I said to them, like, did you receive that from God? Like that was just God's kindness there. And they did. And we don't have to over spiritualize things. Like this is the point when we try to be really dramatic about things and we try to like, sometimes we over spiritualize things and we kind of embellish the story. What I want to say to people is you don't have to. And it's okay that it doesn't mean the same thing to other people. I think sometimes when we share those things, we embellish it a little bit because we want them to be as much in awe as you know, we were, but you don't have to, because God didn't do that for everyone else. Like he's doing that for you to remind you. So that when I have that posture, I start to see just little things that are just like, that feels like a gift from you, God. And then when somebody comes over and just gives a word of encouragement, you know, I'll give one other example. I've mentioned a little bit how early on in my preaching ministry, how I was so dependent on what people thought of the message. It's really common for people because we just don't know, like you want to do a good job and you don't know any other way to know whether you're doing a good job than if people tell you you did a good job. And for people who are extrinsically motivated, like I am, you know, and an extrovert, it's, I think, even worse. And so, but what I found was when I was looking for encouragement from others, it was never enough. I wouldn't be able to receive it. So if someone did give me encouragement, I would think they were just making it up because I must've been really bad. They just felt sorry for me. And if somebody gave me criticism, I couldn't handle that either. And to get to the place now where there are good sermons and there are not as good sermons, or you could say there are bad sermons and less bad sermons. So whatever perspective you want to say. But my identity is in Christ, and what I'm receiving, I always, after the message, I go and I sit down and I'm just trying to receive, like I basically am surrendering that to God and saying, God, that I hope you will do something good with that. And I often feel his comfort. And then what will happen, like sometimes when I'm especially struggling with it, God will often send, like if I'm struggling though with him in it, I'm just like, man, I just feel like this didn't go well. I'll receive his comfort and I'll feel comforted, but then somebody will come up and be really specific of like, hey, this really was an encouragement to me or challenged me. And no longer do I look at it as like, well, only one person said it was a good sermon, so obviously it was a bad sermon. What I look at it as is, okay, God, you did see me in that and you knew I needed some encouragement. And so you sent that person to share that with me. Thank you so much for giving me that. I shouldn't need it. I'm okay no matter what, but I'm so glad that you did that. It was a gift.
Yeah. I that's a beautiful example. I've experienced that too, by the way, where I'm like just feeling like, I don't know if that went how I was hoping it would. Right. And then someone comes up with something that only God could have done or known. And it is so encouraging. And yeah, he knows how to meet us. I love those examples. I didn't know you had talked about that, actually. I didn't realize that with Christoph, the Matthew. And I have never used that passage before. That morning, that was on my heart. It was just like, I couldn't avoid it. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to use this one. I'm encouraged to hear that that was encouraging to someone else. But
isn't that wild though?
Yeah, it is.
So those are the things I don't want to exaggerate, because I said on the podcast actually, and then I said to him or to this person that I've never heard him say that, but I didn't want to go so far as to be like, he has never, you know, and I don't want to get up there and say, so I'm often holding back on those things, you know, like the, you know, when songs are chosen or whatever. Yeah,
God doesn't need our help.
Right. Like, right? Because I don't want to over spiritualize things, and I don't want to, like, sometimes God just gives us a gift that's just meant for us and meant for a few people around. We don't have to like, but at the same time, I want to give him credit and give him glory for that. And so my logical, cynical self just always feels really sheepish about that, of like, well, I don't, you know, this isn't exactly like raising someone from the dead, so it doesn't qualify as, but it is, it's the miraculous nature of a God who interacts with his people and is near to his people. That in and of itself is a miracle, that God actually is present with us and interacts with us and sees us and knows us so well that he knows that this gift is going to be, you know, for you. And I don't want people to miss that. I want to make sure that I'm communicating that with people, and with each other. And again, when we're receiving that, then it's fun to then be, to realize that I could be that person in somebody else's life. I could be the one. So when you feel led to go talk to somebody, or you see somebody and you think, they seem down, I should go talk to them. We have a way of talking ourselves out of that and say, well, I'm sure there's probably a lot of people that would rather, you know, that they would rather have come talk to them, or that would notice that or whatever. I didn't tell you, like, I was struggling. This was a few weeks ago. I was really struggling on a Sunday morning, but I was, I think, doing a pretty good job of hiding it. And somebody came up, I was serving communion, and somebody asked me at the communion table as they were leaving, after we'd served communion, said, you know, hey, are you okay? And I said, yeah, I mean, I'm fine. They just said, well, I just felt like I was supposed to ask you if you were okay. And what I loved about it was the humility of that person. They didn't put themselves in the position of God, of like, you need to tell me what's wrong. You need to tell me, like, what, I want to be the one to, like, they just were the messenger. And in that moment, I felt very seen by God and very cared for by our church family. Not resentful of the people who didn't notice. Yeah, like, why beautiful. Didn't anybody else notice? It was just such a beautiful moment. And I'm just so thankful. I don't even know if that person listens to the podcast or not. So if they do, then they'll probably know that that was them. And I just want to know, like, you, God used you in that moment. And again, part of the beauty was like the humility with which it was shared. And so that would be one example of, like, as we comfort each other, like, just be humble in that we are just messengers. We can't be the comfort for others. So that would be another way that gets twisted, which we don't have time to go into, but just be careful. Not only that, we don't want our identity to be in being the suffering, but we also don't want our identity to be in the one that I'm the comforter. I don't need to be the comforter. God is, and I want to just do what he's telling me to do.
Yeah, that's a burden that we are not meant to bear, right? And when we do, when we take that upon ourselves to be him, it doesn't work. It's just too much for us to handle, that's where I think service for God in that moment becomes really an enemy to intimacy with him. Like, it's just because we're taking something on ourselves that he hasn't given us to take.
Yeah. And that's where we get overwhelmed. And that was part of it. Like, once you start having eyes to see people who are suffering, it can get overwhelming really quickly. You're going to, like, want to go back into your closet. Like, man, it was a lot easier when I just was fixated on my own suffering. And sometimes it is overwhelming. Like, there are Sunday mornings where I just get overcome by looking around and seeing all the, it's a mix, right? Like, I see all the incredible things that God is doing, and I also see all the pain, and joy in people, but it's a lot. So there are times where it feels a little overwhelming, but whenever that gets to that place, I just surrender that and just remind myself, this is not my burden to carry. This is God's. I'm so thankful that he is shouldering this, that he's the one that does the heavy lifting. You know, we're like the person that helps. Have you ever, like, helped move a really heavy couch and then realized you could take your hands off of it and it's still, like, moving in?
Yeah, someone's carrying this. Yeah. I'm not.
Right. I've felt that before when someone's like, oh, this is really heavy. And I'm like, no, it's not. Like, if you don't think it's heavy, then you're probably not carrying very much. You're probably like, and that was an illustration I had in the message that I cut But that's a good reminder for us. So it's probably a good place to land. We just want to cultivate a culture. I hope what people hear is we want to cultivate a culture and to be a people who receive comfort from God, who are so secure in knowing that God sees us and loves us and is with us, that fills up our cup so that we are able to go and comfort others. And that in that environment, we are able to joyfully comfort one another and remember one another. And then that also means as we're doing that, as we're looking around and as we're considering others, that's what will God, the Spirit will bring to mind our missionaries who are serving in other places, our brothers and sisters in the persecuted church across the world. Like, let our minds be carried to that and remember. And it matters. If you remember the persecuted church, for example, and you pray for them, it matters. Do small things. I mentioned it on Sunday, but like go to Voice of the Martyrs and find somebody. They always have people that you can reach out to or whatever, and write a letter to a brother or sister who is, you know, in prison for their faith. Remind them that they're not alone. Remind them that they're not forgotten, that God sees them, and that God put it on their heart, on your heart, to write to them. Would be such an encouragement. But also do it in our community. Remind people who feel like maybe they slipped through the cracks that they haven't. And then if you want help, I mentioned this on Sunday, but if there are those groups of people that you felt specifically inclined towards, talk to us. We can help. We can get you connected with people who, whether it's going into prisons or nursing homes or caring for orphans, whatever the case is, we can help you do that. You can reach out to us at connect@faithpeshtigo.com or give us a call or talk to us on a Sunday. We appreciate you taking the time to listen. We hope it's been helpful. Until next time, grace and peace.